Sometimes, the best stories in golf aren't found on tour. You'll find them at the back of the range. And here's your host, Ben Adelberg.
And welcome to the back of the range. I am your host, Ben Adelberg. This is episode 339. Well, you haven't heard from me in quite a while. Well, there is a very good reason for that. Two incredibly busy months on the road have, kept me away from the microphone, which has meant, obviously, fewer podcast episodes. I actually had to look it up, but in the months of March and April, I was at 10 different golf tournaments. Yeah, I'm kind of crazy, but thankful for each and every one of them. Took me all over Georgia, took me to Cabo, down here in South Florida, Houston, had a great time, but I'm home for a few days before heading out to the National Championships at Omni La Costa in California, so plenty of time to recharge the batteries and put a bow on the college golf season before Nationals. So you're about to get a bunch of podcast episodes over the next few days, so enjoy those, make sure you're subscribed in Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and all the usual stuff. Head over to thebackoftherange.com. I've uploaded some of the photos from my trips over the last several weeks, so go check that out. As for this episode, well, it kind of puts the final touch on my experience at the Masters this year. I was thrilled for Neil Shipley to pick up low amateur honors this year. Incredibly, it worked out that he was paired with Tiger Woods in the final round, and right there by Neil's side was Carter Pitcairn. Carter and Neil have been friends for years. Actually, I first met Carter back in 2021 at Oakmont. He was caddying for Austin Greaser at the USAM, got him all the way to the finals. Fast forward a couple years later, he was on the bag for Neil at last year's US Amateur in the semifinal match that he would end up winning and earning them both a spot in the 2024 Masters. In this episode, we spoke about the week in general, some rookie moments for Carter on the bag, and also, what do you say to Tiger Woods when you're walking down the fairways at Augusta National? Great episode, thrilled for Carter and his family that got to enjoy this incredible moment. Let's just jump right in. Carter, you're at the back of the range. How are you?
I'm great. How are you, Ben?
I am doing well. I'm back home and somewhat rested after 2 weeks in Augusta. And, well, I guess this is like the... Shoot, this is maybe just a couple days after the final round of the Masters. You didn't have to walk 12 miles up and down hills at Augusta National. How are you? Like, I know you're a kid, man, but physically, how are you doing right now?
So I'm still so beat up. I was honestly thinking about like what it would be like to be a full-time caddy, and there's no way I could be walking around Harbortown right now with Neil.
Yeah, it is crazy. I know that's one of the all the first timers that, whether you're fans, players, whatever, oh my gosh, I didn't realize how hilly it is. And yeah, why don't you just throw a staff bag on your back and then let me know how that works out for you.
Yeah, it was pretty funny. So like leading up to the Masters, I was like begging Neil. I was like, can we please just take your college bag or whatever? And he's like, I'll think about it. We'll see what the ping guys want to do. And then out of nowhere one day, he just sent me a picture of a staff bag he got, and he just said, get ready.
Yeah, it would have been, Ping does make a lot of nice stand bags. Just want to let everyone know they could have dressed one up that looked all fancy with his name and any logos on it. But now Neil didn't put like rocks in that staff bag, did he? He didn't even do that at all, did he?
That bag was so heavy. We had probably 15 golf balls, snacks, drinks, training aids, umbrellas.
Hairspray.
Pretty much like, hairspray, shampoo. We had like a locker in there almost.
So you come off this incredible experience caddying for Neil Shipley in the 2024 Masters. We will obviously talk a lot about the prep on site for the week. But, as we do at the back of the range, we always like to get a little bit of backstory, a little bit of information. So the narrative, if you're in the media center as much as I was, you kind of knew what the narrative was. You guys are childhood friends. When did, I guess, you start playing golf? And then when did you kind of start crossing paths with Neil to the point where you're playing together and hanging out together. When did that all start?
Yeah, so that started, let's see. I'd always played golf when I was little, but I mainly played a lot of soccer and basketball growing up, like through elementary and middle school. And then, honestly, I got to give credit to Neil. He came, I was probably 11 or 12 years old. He's a couple years older. He came up to me on the range one day and just kind of introduced himself, and the rest was history. We started pretty much playing golf every day after that. And I give credit to him and Nathan Pyatt, as you've met before. Those guys, I'd always looked up to them, and to I played all my golf with pretty much.
So Neil goes obviously to James Madison. You guys keep in touch while, you know, you're still in high school, or, and then when obviously you both end up in college around the same time. But you know, he goes on this basically this tear, which kind of started almost a year ago. I guess it's a little less than that when you consider that, you know, he really kind of jumped out at the national championship and then just went on this really great run during the summer. People obviously know you from this week at the Masters, but many probably forget that you have experience caddying at pretty high levels. You caddied for Austin Greaser in the 2021 U.S. Amateur when it was at Oakmont. You're an Oakmont caddy, so that really kind of played into hands there. You also were on the bag for Neil for just one day, which is like the important day if you want to really kind of get all the benefits of playing in a U.S. Amateur. Can you share the story of how you got the call last year to caddy for Neil at the U.S. Amateur?
Yeah, so my family and I, we were in Beaver Creek, Colorado, and I, as I do every day, I just Snapchat or text Neil, whatever, and I saw, obviously, he's playing really well in the U.S. Am, and he calls me out of nowhere. He's like, hey, saw you're in Colorado. My caddy, Jimmy Beck, has a baby shower that he's got to fly home to. Is there any way you can get down to Cherry Hills and caddy for me tomorrow? And I was like, of course. So my brother and I drove down to Denver. It was about 2 hours. And yeah, we stayed at his Airbnb with his host family, and the rest is history. I'd never seen the golf course before, and it was a pretty crazy experience.
So, and that kind of falls into maybe what you bring to the table as a caddy, because, you know, it's a little bit different with Augusta National, but you're going in there sight unseen to Cherry Hills, and your prep for Augusta National is limited compared to, you know, maybe other caddies of participants or a club caddy for that matter. So what do you think that you bring to the table as a caddy when maybe your course knowledge, well, not maybe, your course knowledge is going to be less than maybe other caddies?
Yeah, so I think, like, obviously trust in Neil that he knows the golf course really well. He's playing good golf. I think I bring, like, what I bring is just, as Neil always says, it's like kind of a calming factor. Like, it's someone for him to crack jokes with out there, look at when he feels down, or anytime I see him. I mean, I know him very well. I can tell when he's maybe not in the best headspace, and I think I say a couple things to him and it cheers him up. I know we had a little talk. What was it? He was 3 down through 11, and we kind of had a little chat walking over to 12T to make that back 9 run, so I guess it worked.
Yeah, that was at Cherry Hills against J.M. Butler in that semifinal. I was caught in the vortex too after that wedge shot on 17, because he saw me and almost knocked me over, which I survived that one. But yeah, so that win in the semis of the USAM obviously gets him in the final, which he ends up losing to Nick Dunlap, which everyone knows, but also gets him the exemption into this Masters and gets him into the U.S. Open as well. So you mentioned the calming presence. You know, when I would watch you guys out there, you're working on the numbers, Neil picks the club, and then you just kind of, like, you know, move over about 6 or 7 steps and You're just kind of leaning on the bag, looking ridiculously casual. Like, are you? I mean, really? Like, there's just so many times. Like, hey, he's like, all right, Neil, it's all you. I'm just gonna be over here, just kind of, you know, just hanging. Let me know how that turns out. We'll go find it again. But like, were you really that? Are you really that calm out there, or is it just you're able to hide it pretty well? Because you kind of just have that look about you, like, yeah, I'm just out here, you know, hanging.
I would say most of the nerves would start at the beginning of the round. And as soon as we get, like, started to walk down two, it would all, I mean, we would kind of just, our headspace would change and we'd just go out there and have fun, really.
You mentioned a little bit about the preparation for the Masters. You know, other caddies maybe have years of experience. Club caddies are there throughout the year. I know that Neil told you that he wanted you to caddy for him at the Masters in November over Thanksgiving. Once the initial excitement and shock wears off from that, what did you do to prepare before you got on site?
Yeah, to be honest, I would work out every day and I would try to run every other day to get in good shape. And I'm glad I did, because I felt really good out there versus if I didn't do any of that, I probably would have been struggling pretty hard.
Okay. So you did a lot of physical prep for it.
Yeah. I was doing some cardio and make sure I was 100% out there. So,
and
I kind of just obviously he's the one hitting the shots, and we were able to go on two practice trips back in January, and then we went over Easter. So I had a good idea of what the golf course looked like, and I watched a lot of YouTube videos on just like final round of the Masters, like Scottie Scheffler, Jon Rahm, Jordan Spieth, just kind of see how they play it. And Neil and I talked about like strategies out there, where to leave the ball and whatnot. And like those guys truly like play it to perfection. It's pretty cool to watch.
So you get on site, and we'll talk a little bit about the prep once you got there, because one of the really interesting things that I noticed is I think on Monday you played 9 holes by yourself, and then yes, Tuesday you played 9 holes with Nick Dunlap.
You walk us through it.
Go take it from Monday.
So Monday we went out in the morning, we played 9 holes by ourselves, and then we went and got lunch. He hit some balls. We met up with Nick Dunlap in the afternoon and we played the back 9 with him.
Okay.
And then we go to Tuesday. He just kind of practiced all morning and we were looking for somebody to play with. Russell Henley and Zach Johnson were on the tee as we walked up to 10. So we just hopped in their game and just played 9 holes. And he did some more practicing after that. And then come on Wednesday, we met up with Ludwig and played the front 9 with him. So
really all you had as far as playing with someone that had experience at the Masters was 9 holes with Zach Johnson and Russell Henley.
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
So was this part of a strategy to kind of keep to yourselves for the most part, or was it just randomly kind of happened that way?
You know, I would say it randomly kind of happened, although our mindset the whole week is just like, it's just us two out there, and we kind of trusted our game plan and, you know, rely on each other and just know that, just kind of trust that we know what we're doing. Obviously it helps to get pointers here and there. I think Zach and Russell were a great help to us, but yeah.
Were there any specifics that you got from Zach Johnson and Russell Henley that perhaps you guys included in your game plan that you hadn't covered yourselves already? Was there anything new that you learned?
Yeah. So a funny part was we were on 13 and Neil hits this, he turns one over pretty good. He says he did not mean to do that, but he got it like 60, 70 yards past him, past both the guys. And they were talking about their layups. So Neil walks back to where they are and they're just discussing different numbers, like angles to play it into the green, and they're like, Neil, don't worry about what we're talking about, you like just disregard everything we say and hit your 6 iron on the green.
It's like you're never gonna be back here, dude.
Yeah.
So Wednesday, you get the afternoon off. Max, Neil's brother, caddies for him in the par three. You're kind of getting ready in your mindset. You actually have another unique experience where you're kind of in the caddy yard and getting to hang out with some pretty cool people. As far as like you by yourself, not with Neil, you just interacting with other caddies. Was there much there? Because, I mean, it's a pretty – obviously, it's the Masters. It's a major. You know, these other caddies, I mean, they're getting a paycheck through their player. This is just part of the job. You're not really in that kind of mindset where you're, you know, worried about, you know, hey, this is a work week, so to speak, as far as financially. Was there much interaction for you with other caddies?
Yeah, so I feel like most of the interaction came from the guys we would play with.
Sure.
Every caddy we were in a group with was great to me. I just kind of talked a lot about, I was asked them questions about their history, just tips and pointers on the course and kind of what the whole caddy life is like. But as far as in the caddy barn, it was a lot of those guys were just kind of strictly business. Obviously, yep. It is their job and what they do for a living. So I kind of just respected that. And I didn't really know how they viewed my situation. I was kind of just there for fun and taking it all in. So, yeah. But everybody was great. By the end of the week, I knew a lot of the guys. Would just say hi to them in the locker room. And yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of a weird one. Like he earns his, you know, Neil earns his invitation to the Masters with his runner up finish. It really isn't a qualifier for caddies. It's just whoever the player hires. So yeah, I was kind of wondering, like, you know, did they like, of course they look at you like, all right, you know, if they don't know this, any of the story, they don't know what you've been caddying in. They're probably like, all right, who's this kid? You know, like, did you have any of that? Like any like imposter syndrome? Like what am I doing here? Like these guys, I mean, like you're third round, you're with Joe LaCava. I mean, sure. Cantley's there too, but you're with Joe LaCava. That had to have been just absolutely crazy.
That was probably the coolest part. Joe was great. We just talked about a lot of sports with him. He's from Connecticut. So obviously UConn just came off a national championship. It was great. And I actually asked him, I was like, so how's your game? And he's like, oh, I don't even play. I'm terrible. I'm an 8 handicap. Somehow I'm good at caddying.
That's nuts. Yeah. Getting paired with him and picking. And I think you told me like just even the interaction with Cantlay was great too, which most people would think, oh my gosh, you're with Patrick Cantlay. Are you guys even going to talk all day? But I think you told me last week that things were great.
Yeah, they were. I would definitely say he was on the quieter side, but you got to respect him. Like it is his job and I'm not going to try to annoy him out there, but actually the night before, one of our family friends texted me that he grew up with Patrick and their families are super close. So I made that connection with him. It was on 9 fairway and kind of opened up to me a little more.
That's cool.
Which is cool.
Yeah. So you guys, you know, Friday was probably the most challenging day of the week for you guys as far as, you know, just getting it in the house, especially in the afternoon with all that crazy weather. I mean, wind is blowing sand out of bunkers, which I don't think I've ever seen at Augusta National. And, you know, you're even through the front nine. You know, you shoot one under in the front in the opening round on Thursday. You're even through nine. You're probably at the time like top 15, top 20-ish, somewhere in that neighborhood. I mean, you kind of have something going. Yeah. And then the wheels get a little wobbly, plus 4 over the next 5 holes. And now that cut line is maybe you're a little bit closer to that, or it's becoming a little more relevant. Just the back nine on Friday, how do you guys get it in the house?
So, yeah, we played the front nine great. Bogey 10, double 12, and then, or no, bogey 10, double 11, bogey 12. And on it, I think there was just some tension between us, but we were both like, oh crap. Like, I don't even know if we're going to make the cut now. We're three or four over. And he hits his tee shot on 13 and we're walking down that hill off the tee box. And we just talked to each other. We're like, hey dude, like we're here. We got to lock in and we can do this. Like it's going to be a grind, but I guess we just hit the reset button in a way.
Yeah.
No, and then it was pretty scary. So his second shot on 13, I was like, all right, we're going to hit the reset. So in my mind, we're like, okay, we got to make a birdie. And he's in the pine straw up on the right of the fairway on 13. And it's 219 to cover the water. And he's like, nine out of 10 times, I'm going to cover this with my three iron. And because it winds into the face a little bit. And I'm like, all right, go for it. And I could tell, like, he took a little bit longer over the ball, and I could tell he didn't like it. And after he hits the shot, he's like, dude, why in the world would you let me hit that shot? It was so stupid. But he didn't hit it good. Like, he managed to kind of just, like, squirrel a little hook into that front greenside bunker. Chip knocks it on the green and makes a 40-footer, and I think that was the turning point.
So at that point, I'm kind of thinking to your, you know, it brings up another point. Like, in now looking back on it, do you think you should have stepped in on that? Like, when do you kind of get your legs? It's great that you guys know each other and you're friends. It's a familiar face, but like, that's kind of part of the job where you just said you're kind of reading it where he's not feeling comfortable. Like, did that moment kind of help you for the rest of the week to say, okay, maybe I need to be a little more forceful?
100%. And that's where I kind of got like the green light from him to step in the way and kind of like double check decisions. Cause earlier in the week, I didn't want to step on his toes. I mean, obviously we're super close. If it weren't in the Masters, I would, but I just wanted him to like be as comfortable as he could and kind of trust I trusted that he knew what he was doing. And obviously he's an incredible player. So let him do his thing. But as the tournament went on, I just started to get more and more comfortable with, like, say, call him off a shot or, yeah.
Yeah, because at that point, you're there, you have the job, and being a yes man doesn't help either one of you.
No, it doesn't, and I kind of realized that especially – he shot 80 on Saturday, and it was – there were a lot of times where I wish I would have stepped in. I started to more Sunday because – just some of the shot decisions weren't my favorite, but he was very comfortable with. So I guess now I know going forward. But actually, going back to that little slump we had from 10 to 12.
Yeah.
This will show you how much like my head was spinning. So he hits it in the back bunker on 12. And I didn't know this at the time, but after the round, Emiliano Grillo's caddy comes up to me and he's like, hey, were you guys in the bunker on 12? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, you forgot to rake it. And my heart just like sank.
Oh God.
He was super nice about it. He's like, I get it. Like, whatever. Like, we didn't care. It didn't affect our play. So, but that was quite the rookie mistake, but it was bound to happen.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing that most people they're focusing on Neil. You know, he's the one hitting the shots, but yeah, you're caddying at the highest level of golf with the best caddies in the world. And
yes,
that's the other thing. Like, you're trying to do your job with your player, but I'm guessing you're also completely paranoid of, God, I got to rake this perfectly. Don't do anything stupid. I mean, how nervous were you, I guess, on Thursday, not just for Neil, but for you?
Yeah, I mean, the bunkers were definitely what I was most worried about. So we're like, Neil's like, did they like tell you how to rake bunkers or anything? And I was like, no, I didn't. I don't even know. I've never been told how to rake a bunker. I kind of just do it how I want to. And I was like, Neil's like, all right, I just won't hit any bunkers this week.
That's a great plan, Neil. Okay.
He gets up on the first hole and punches one out of the trees into the greenside bunker. And I'm like, okay, here we go.
Yep.
So then Joe actually gave me a little, so I watched him do it and then asked him about bunker raking afterwards. So my rake jobs were pretty good after that.
Getting a rake job lesson from Joe LaCava. Well, I mean, that's bound to happen because there's no way. First of all the little intricacies of professional caddying, there's no way you're going to know that. I mean, they're doing things that they've been doing for years and years. And they probably, I mean, there's caddies that have caddied. I mean, they've had these similar pairings and they have just, they have a nice back and forth and a routine, and you're trying to learn that while you're also trying to get numbers at a golf course that you've never been at. I mean, there's a lot on your shoulders there.
Yeah. The scariest thing for me was, so I'd been told different things leading up to the week. Like, oh, there are guys that rake the bunkers. You don't have to worry about that. You don't have to get your players' divots. And I was like, I'm not going to trust that. I got to rake my own bunkers and everything. So I'm glad I didn't believe that.
Yeah, I mean, there's just a lot for you to try and to learn. But, I mean, you get them through. You guys make the cut. When you make the cut and you realize that, oh, we're the only amateurs to make the cut. So you've just got your guy the low am trophy for the Masters. What was Friday night like? Because, you know, not that, you know, you're expecting any sort of a drop off in intensity, but when you kind of know that your destiny is set for Sunday evening, there had to be a little bit of a different feeling around there Friday night.
Yeah, 100%. So actually Friday after the round, it was definitely like one of the highs of the week. And me and his swing coach, Wei, went over. I took my caddy suit off and we all went over into like the main patron area and got some ice cream sandwiches. So that's kind of how we celebrated. And then we just hung out at the house afterwards.
So you get back on Saturday, you know, as I said, really challenging day. You know, I'm thinking, okay, you know, yes, you have the low am kind of wrapped up. You know, you're probably, you know, a little too far outside of the lead to really think about that. I think you're about 8-9 shots away. But, you know, yeah, if you really do something special on Saturday, maybe you keep that top 12 in, you know, in contention, so you can maybe think about going for that in the final round. But obviously things go differently. But bad finish, you get done. I talked to Neil in the presser. He was, you know, not thrilled, shot 80, and then he goes off to practice. And then things start kind of shaking out where you're starting to get into the same general zip code of Tiger Woods on the leaderboard. When did you kind of start looking at that and tracking it?
Yeah, so he was over on the putting green just doing his thing, and I was sitting in the caddy bar and just kind of scrolling through my phone, and a lot of my buddies from home started to text me like, yo, there's a chance you guys could be paired with Tiger. And then I looked at it, I'm like, yeah, there is a chance. And then it became official, and I ran across the range and told Neil, and he freaked out and just like started pacing around the putting green. And I don't even know if he hit any balls after that. I think he was just so excited.
So that was the end of his practice once he realized he's teeing it up with Tiger. And then I guess everything just goes out the window. Everything changes from that point. I mean, there's no way you slept normal that night.
No, I didn't. That's the fastest I've ever gotten out of bed. Honestly, I didn't even like know what it meant. I was like trying to wrap my head around it that night, like how crazy this actually is, and the fact like Sunday at Augusta, like it's with Tiger Woods, it's kind of like the pinnacle of golf wrapped up in a nutshell.
So I've already talked to Neil about his way of introducing himself to Tiger, and for a player standpoint, it's pretty simple. Like, hi, I'm Neil Shipley, I'm playing golf with you today for 5 hours, we should, you know, shake hands and say hello. But I don't know what the protocol is for caddies introducing themselves to the opposing player or the player that they're paired with. So what was your how do you introduce yourself to Tiger Woods and make it not look like you're just a fanboy losing your mind?
Yeah, so I got to honestly thank Neil's coach at Ohio State. He texted us Saturday night, and he's like, boys, like, you have an incredible opportunity, and just try to be, like, I don't fanboy him, like, take it very seriously and just introduce yourself as if he's a normal guy and as if we are. And that's what I tried to do. I just gave him a firm handshake and looked him in the eye, and I think he really respected that.
I was standing there on the putting green by the first tee when you guys came out. Slightly more applause for Tiger than Neil, which, you know, just barely. But I'm right there on the ropes on the putting green. Neil's putting on one end and Tiger's on the other. You're hanging out there just at the walkway to the first tee, and it's complete silence. Nobody's talking. There's nothing going on. And it was just one of the most bizarre kind of scenes, because everyone's looking at Neil. Everyone's looking at Tiger. They're just kind of like, okay, this is going to happen. Was that the most nervous? I mean, the first tee and the putting green and hearing, you know, Tiger's name announced, that had to be one of the most kind of bizarre and just surreal experiences you had the entire week. And that's really saying something.
Yeah, it was incredible. Honestly, so sitting on the putting green, it was definitely a weird feeling. I'm just like trying not to turn my back and like make eye contact with any fans or whatever.
Yeah, I noticed that, by the way. You didn't say hi to me. I was kind of upset about that, but that's okay.
I honestly kind of just blacked out and put my blinders on and just watched. I was just staring at Tiger's putter, watching him warm up. I thought it was I did that all around, because obviously that putter is legendary. So, and then Charlie's standing a foot away from me the whole time. I talked to him a little bit, because the golf course he plays down in Florida is, my grandparents are out there, so I've gotten the opportunity to play it a couple times. So I've seen him around, so I made that connection with him.
So you're watching Neil, you're canning for him, you're also watching Tiger. I guess it looked like maybe walking down two, I think they started kind of chatting. I mean, you're really there eavesdropping on some pretty cool conversations. Now, I know that, you know, speaking to Neil, you know, he will have his experience of when he felt comfortable talking to Tiger. Did you at any point ever feel comfortable just talking directly to him and, you know, asking him a question?
It took me a while. I think like for about 5 or 6 holes, I was just like in my own head, like, what do I even ask him? Like, I don't want to be a fanboy and
right,
ask him golf questions, but I also have like no idea what else I would ask him. So Neil did a good job at breaking the ice for himself and I, and kind of made us comfortable. It was down 2 fairway. He was telling us a story. I think Neil mentioned like the Stanford practice facilities, and Tiger was like, oh no, they're not. They were not like that back in the day. We didn't even have a bunker. And me and the guys on the team were kind of complaining to our coach that we don't even have a bunker to practice out of. So the coach went and got a bunch of shovels, gave them to the guys on the team and said, go dig a bunker.
Oh, God.
So that's what they did.
Of course.
And Tiger was saying that, like, so Tiger was a freshman at the time, and Noda and some of the older guys on the team were, I guess Tiger got picked on a good bit, and all Tiger would say to them is like, why don't we go play for it? Cause that's all he had on him.
Right.
They didn't. Tiger said they didn't let that slide.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that wasn't going to happen. This round must have felt like it just took off like a blur. The other thing that I think Neil mentioned in his presser is that Tiger said to him that he woke up at like 3:45 to get ready for that round. I know I was thinking it for a good amount during that evening before. I'm thinking, please let him get to the tee box, because, I mean, look, Sunday at the Masters is great, but when you think you're playing with Tiger and then that changes to playing with a marker, I don't care who the marker is, that would have been just an absolute oh my God, that would have been crushing.
Yeah, that would have been terrible. Neil was worried about that on Saturday night. He was like, I don't even know if like Tiger's going to play. Like, he just shot whatever, and obviously his health isn't great, but he ended up playing, so we're very thankful for that. And I think Neil said something to him about that. So
yeah, that was pretty. That was absolutely incredible. So you've seen the memes about Neil. You've seen the fun stuff. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, I love Neil, but yeah, it's so easy to have fun at his expense. So like, I'm not incredibly surprised that a meme was cultivated. From it. Have there been any memes on you? You know, basically like, you know, has this caddy ever shaved before, or, you know, Is it, did he win some sort of a raffle from the First Tee program to get there? Like, how, what's your treatment on social media been like?
So I reasonably so I would scroll through the comments or whatnot, but on the comments weren't that bad. A lot of them were like, oh, that's awesome. Like, this kid will never forget that. Like, Tiger, amazing for like making this kid's whatever. But I heard the most chirps I heard from when I was actually out there, like my favorite one was I was walking back to 8T and some guy was like, oh, like someone, his mom forgot to put sunscreen on him.
Okay. Well, that's actually kind of funny.
Yeah. And then I would hear like a lot of stuff like, oh, that's gotta be his brother. Or like, how old is this kid? Blah, blah, blah. But
you guys, I'll tell you what, you guys actually really lucked out for another incredible reason. It's roped off so nicely at Augusta National. Me being in the galleries throughout the week, not just with your group, but with any group, it's incredible the just some of the dumb comments that you hear out there.
Oh, I mean, I'm sure.
It could, you could just write like a book about like just the one-liners you hear that are just, it's so crazy. Because it's not all super serious golf fans out there. It's almost like people.
No, and Neil and I picked up on that super quickly because, like, so there's a lot of blind approach shots out there. And a lot of the times Neil would knock it in the middle of the green, and that's right where we're looking, like 20, 30 feet away, and just like putt up to the hole. And you just don't get any sort of reaction from the fans. They just want to see the ball spin back and go to a foot.
Right. Like,
that's what they think good golf is. I think there's a lack of education amongst the average golf fan.
Yeah, and it just, yeah, some of the, and also everyone there, like, I hate to say it, but, like, they're there for, you know, they're there to party.
The crow's nest.
They're there for, like, yeah, they're there for the merch tent. They're there for the beers. They're there for, and yeah, they're, I mean, there's some educated fans out there, but I was.
Oh, 100%, yeah.
Everyone's talking about, hey, did you buy a gnome at the merch? Like, who cares about, I mean, come on.
There was actually a lot of caddies getting gnomes.
Really?
That was a big deal. That was a big deal in the caddy barn. Yeah. A lot of the caddies would show up super early and go over to the shop, and guys were kind of buying them off each other. It was cool.
Now, did you get to keep your bib, or did you just keep the nameplate on the back? Or like, what about any special souvenirs that you were able to keep for yourself?
So I did not get to keep either. All I got to keep was the hat, really. I went to the Caddy Master with Neil's agent and begged him to keep it. But he said the only way you get it is if your guy wins it. So I told him we'll be back next year.
Love it. Love it.
Yeah.
Let's see. Your parents were there the whole time.
Yeah, my whole family was there. They had a great time. My grandpa was there, which was... Grandpa and uncle were there, which is really cool to see. They were the happiest people in the world, as like both of our families were. They thought it was, I mean, it was the coolest thing. So,
yeah, playing with Cantlay, like, you know, he has that rep of being really quiet, and you know, it still has to be a little intimidating for you because the first two rounds, you had Hisatsune and you had Mike Weir. You know, who's must have been a dream, you know, pairing there, because, you know, must have been excellent to be around. But yeah, Saturday, get Cantlay. Like, how do you kind of like, I mean, you're going to be with him for 5 hours. At some point, you got to like talk about something. Like, how do you guys break the ice with Cantlay?
Yeah. So it was actually right as we're walking off the first tee, Neil goes, so Patrick, I have to ask, what's your favorite DeWalt power tool?
No, come on, he didn't do that, did he?
Yeah, he did. And Cantlay started to laugh pretty good, and he's like, you know, Neil, I don't even know if I've used a power tool. I think I've got a DeWalt leaf blower at the house.
And there's not, yeah, there's really, I guess that's the start of it, isn't it? That's the start of the conversation.
Yeah. And then honestly, after, so he walked off the first tee with us, and then every tee box after that he walked like 50 yards ahead, which is pretty funny.
So that was it. Yeah, basically, after the DeWalt joke, it was like, all right, I'm going to get away from these kids, and yeah, that's about it.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Well, at least, well, these things happen. Carter, well, I appreciate you grabbing some time. I know it's been kind of a whirlwind and you're you know, kind of getting back to normal life. And what an experience, man. I'm really happy for you. Really happy for Neil. I mean, from where it started with, you know, just called in as a sub at the USAM last year and then ending up playing, you know, or caddying for Neil in the final round of the Masters with Tiger Woods. It's got to be a dream, man. So I appreciate you giving me the time, and also appreciate you following the Back of the Range. You've been doing it for years and years. And yeah, let's keep in touch. Let me know when your next caddy gig is going to be. And I appreciate you stopping by the Back of the Range.
Yeah, of course. Thank you so much, Ben, for having me on. I'm sure I'll see you soon.
And there you have it. Special thanks to Carter Pitcairn for joining me on this episode here at the Back of the Range. Don't forget, follow along on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Every episode is available at thebackoftherange.com. We'll see you next time here at the Back of the Range.